Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
As calls for a redress scheme for victims of sexual abuse in schools mount, the Taoiseach now has suggested compensation shouldn't be parked until after a full statutory inquiry. Well, for more on this and reaction to the shocking revelations of the government's scoping inquiry into sexual abuse in religious-run schools, we're joined now by former Archbishop of Dublin, Diarmaid Martin. You're very welcome to the programme. Good morning, Diarmaid.
Good morning. Good morning.
I think it's fair to say most people felt that they couldn't really be shocked anymore by claims of abuse in Ireland, given everything that we have heard. But this scoping report has shocked us, hasn't it? Were you surprised?
When I was made Archbishop, I had to face the question of trying to get up to date on what was happening in Dublin Diocese. And I dedicated a Saturday, for example, to read files. By Saturday afternoon, I simply had to throw the files on the ground. It was so upsetting. And this is worse. I mean, I'm extraordinarily struck by the numbers in special schools.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual abuse of children is a vile thing, but sexual abuse of particularly vulnerable children is very shocking. And that's the second thing is, you know, the numbers are very high. For example, if you look at for the fee-paying schools, one of the reasons for this is that I think most people may have thought that this scoping inquiry was primarily about those schools. And this would mean, I think, that the numbers regarding the other schools is probably underestimated, probably higher. And the other church boarding schools in Ireland, the diocesan colleges, are not there at all. You know?
So it's bigger than what we have heard about in the scoping report, is what you're saying. There will be more.
I was very pleased to see a Garda statement this morning asking people to come forward, because I think, you know, if people realise they will have safe and friendly reception, they will come forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we learn about this, I think the long term it's better.
Just going back to what you said about the special schools, because the Irish Independent has that headline today, you know, the abusers were moved between special schools. But the Ryan report did tell us about that. Like, reading from it here, it's quoted in the Irish Times again today.
Yeah.
The Brothers of Charity, who ran Lota, and they had a place in Galway as well, failed in their duty of care to the children in Lota in that they placed a known sexual abuser unsupervised in a school with the most vulnerable and at-risk children.
Yeah.
Now, that's from the Ryan report. So we did know.
I think one of the important things to look at this is the whole idea of safeguarding. You know, sexual abusers don't abuse small children because they're sexually starved. They're only interested in abusing small children. It's interesting to see that moving at these people when they're seen to be dangerous. But to do it to such vulnerable children is something that I find very, very hard to stomach.
You know? Mm-hmm. But were you aware of that in all of the work that you did and all the files that you read that was going on?
The files that I were dealing with are mainly with diocesan priests.
Mm-hmm.
You know? All of those people were vulnerable. You know? I can remember. I would say of the categories of people that I have the highest regard for were poor, ordinary, working-class women who came to my predecessors and said to them, I would not like any other child to have to go through what my child did. And they weren't listened to. You know? And they were never going to send their children to fee-paying schools. But they knew what it meant to abuse a child. And the other thing is that's important is, you know, the descriptions in this scoping inquiry are shattering, but the damage is much wider than just the actual physical abuse. Child sexual abuse it takes away the entire self-esteem of a child. You know, the abuser is actually saying to a child, "I could do anything I like with you. You're worthless," and that's the thing that drags right throughout their life. And then, you know, the sexual abuse of a child isn't just about, doesn't just damage the child, damages parents, spouses, generations, children. It's an extraordinary thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the numbers and the incidences are frightening, but the reality is much greater. And that's the sad thing.
We spoke to Liam O'Brien, who made the BlackRock Boys documentary. We spoke to him on Monday, and he was telling us about conversations he's had since 2022 with men who spoke to people from the scoping inquiry and making those phone calls from the car because they didn't want anyone in their families to know about it. Just when you talk about the poor, ordinary working class women who weren't heard by your predecessors, one of the shocking elements, I think, of this report is that there are still people who haven't been heard and who are afraid still to speak out.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I was pleased to see that appeal by the Gardaí.
For people and to come forward,
And there was a thing in it which struck me particularly. You know, the Gardaí are tied down by the law and by certain procedural questions. And they said, we will give a sympathetic explanation to, you know, to people if we can't act.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, is it's very important that we don't, that the process then of coming forward doesn't end up in being extremely frustrating.
Can I ask you about the orders? Because just looking again at the Ryan report, and we know this was true of so many orders, it says about the Brothers of Charity, it put the reputation of the congregation over and above the safety and care of children. We know that went on. Is it still happening now, is my question to you?
I hope not, I mean that it's very clear that a lot of the abuse was in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and then it seems to have died down. But a lot of people came forward precisely in the latter period when the church had norms in place. And it seems to me that, in fact, people were not leaders in some organizations were simply not following the norms. I mean, if an allegation came against a priest in my diocese, I immediately had to take measures, painful measures. Sometimes, there were mistakes made, but there were panels which were to investigate this. It was taken out of my hands, and matters were reported to the guards. I hope that's not happening, but I can say that it isn't. I just say one thing as well, that many of these orders, the superior people took decisions to safeguard their own institution. Not only did they do immense damage to children, they also damaged the good name of the backbone of their own institutions, which are their own brothers, sisters and so on, who do good work and blameless work.
And that damage is almost unquantifiable, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the damage to the children is much more important.
Of course.
They didn't safeguard the institution. They damaged their own charism.
Mm-hmm. You said back in 2018, you asked the question about why Catholicism in Ireland appeared to be such a cruel place. Why was this happening here? Have you been able to answer that question?
It's very interesting that when the Pope met the Irish bishops, he did say something of that nature to but it was never taken up. We did have a cruel, authoritarian, harsh religion, that's the very opposite of the essence of Christianity. One of the essences of Christianity was that when Jesus drew images of the real essence of Christianity you must become innocent like a child, and that means that abusing children is abusing the message of Jesus in its depth. That sometimes people say, well, the number of incidences in the church is comparable to families and other institutions and so on. But that it should happen in the Church of Jesus Christ is something that something that we have to be ashamed of,
And to cover up that abuse and to ignore it and to have that culture of ignoring abuse, it's almost as bad as the crime itself.
Yeah, it is, because I mean, so many people are hurt by it, you know. But I mean, it's very important that the safeguarding measures we have in the church and more and more in society, they're the things which will keep. Pedophiles will be attracted to any place where they have a privileged access to children. That can be in a whole range of areas, sporting, schools, and so on. They will be driven away if they find there's no easy access for them, and there's no welcome for them. But the incidence of pedophilia doesn't change in society. It isn't a modern, you know. And if they leave the churches, they leave swimming, they'll find their way somewhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we all need to be mindful of, I suppose. Do you believe that that's what explains the level of paedophilia within the church over those decades that you mentioned earlier, that it was ease of access that attracted these people to the church?
It was ease of access and knew in somehow or other that somehow they would not just get away with it, may even be protected, you know. I mean, I remember in one case, in the case of the priest, the children in the school were laughed at, were jeered by the other kids in the school for hanging around with that priest. That meant the children on the street knew what was going on, and the parish priest didn't seem to get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, or ignored it.
Yeah. Or ignored it. Yeah, yeah. But see, that's the one thing. If the norms are not followed, then this will continue. Now, I worry about. That in some of these cases you could see that the colleagues knew that there was something strange about Father X and didn't act on it, you know. A thing that worries me again is some of these people, when you look at the stories, they were horrible people. They were angry people, they were nasty people, they were people who drank, they were people who, you know, were unkept. How did they get into the seminary? How did they, you know, get through the seminary? That's a problem.
I want to ask you about Simon Harris's comments that a redress scheme for the victims can't wait, he says, until a full statutory inquiry is complete. Is that even possible? Do you see a way that could be done?
I think, you know, two things have to, this process is going to be a long process. Certain things can be done, especially because many of the survivors are elderly, many of the perpetrators are elderly, and we will never come to a just system if we don't start doing it quickly. I believe the criminal prosecution should continue, and I'm pleased to see the Gardaí are doing that. The compensation, you know, people are responsible for the foreseeable consequences of their acts. If people have acted in a way that have damaged people, those people have a right to be compensated in some way. On the other hand, compensation can only be paid when there's indication that, you know, that something really happened. Now, I'm a little worried when I think of that very courageous woman, Louise O'Keefe. Mm-hmm. She was taken by the Irish state right to the European courts to recognise the fact that the state had a responsibility for having been abused. And I know that many of those who are now claiming on the basis of an instruction of the European courts to the Irish state are finding it very difficult to move. Now, I believe that one way to move forward is for the government to establish a clear lead public figure in government who will take the lead on this. The Irish government is not too good at joined up thinking. We should have some person, a senior person in government, who says, I will stand up, carry the flag and take responsibility to explain where we are, where progress is being made, where the obstacles are. And that people can turn to them. Otherwise, the thing will drift into. There are clear legal problems that we have to face. you know, the law has its force, and the Constitution has its rights.
Yeah.
And criminals have their rights. Yeah.
But in saying that a government figure should take responsibility for this area, you're not absolving the religious orders, because Simon Harris is saying
not.
Now.
No. I'm saying when I say lead, that they take the lead on all of this, and that they answer, and if people are upset that the religious are not cooperating, well, then this person can publicly answer.
Mm-hmm. Because we have had instances, haven't we, of religious orders, whether it's changing names, moving assets, in order to ensure that they don't have to pay out on the back of this. Does it concern you that these orders could be left without any assets if right were to be done, some of them?
I don't know the details, but I think that there should be a fair and open assessment of responsibility. But I do feel that the lead is the responsibility of the state, and they have to demand from other individuals and groupings within the state that they carry their responsibilities. But if we don't have that lead, it will drift on.
Mm-hmm. But just going back to what you said, about Jesus, about Christianity, I'm thinking about the vow of poverty. I mean, why should these organisations be trying to put their arms around their assets in the face of these, children who were abused?
I say individuals and organisations are responsible for the foreseeable consequences of their actions, and that includes financial responsibility if they've damaged people. But I mean, it has to be done in a fair and, above all, in an open way.
There have been calls as well, I'm sure you've heard them over the last few days. Fergus Finlay comes to mind on Liveline, who said it, that the religious should be taken out of schools altogether.
I think that the religious do great work in schools, but where an organisation has shown that it's incapable, or that hasn't been following even their own publicly norms, then one could take action against that particular group. But collective punishment of individuals is. I mean, I think in terms of examples. I remember. A young man coming to me who had been abused in an institution. He was extremely angry, and what he said about that religious congregation was terrible. But then he said, in the middle of it all, except for Brother James. Now, I've no idea who Brother James was or is, but there was one man there who lived up to the character, the charism of the congregation he belonged to, and left an indelible good impression on that young man. So there are plenty of those around, and there are people who really live a life of poverty to do it. But people are doing things in order to get out of their responsibilities, you can't stand over that either.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Pope Francis is aware of what has been happening here this week? Do you know if he's been told about the report?
I doubt that he has been. But however, Pope Francis has established, and this is an important thing, procedures now to deal with bishops and religious superiors who don't carry out their and he has deposed quite a number of bishops for not following the church's norms on protecting children. I think this is an important thing, that if a religious superior doesn't carry out their norms, then measures should be taken against them.
Well, Diarmaid, we'll leave it there and thank you for your time. That's the former Archbishop of Dublin there, Archbishop Diarmaid Martin. And a listener says, I'm one of the rare people who successfully pursued a legal action against a religious order in the High Court. We fought tooth and nail. They fought us and they threatened to seek damages if we lost the civil case. It was like taking on a multinational. And if you've been affected by anything you've heard there in that discussion, support is available at rte.ie/helplines.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.